Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Ali Kiefer.
It's really hard to put in all that effort to train for it. And it takes a lot to get to the finish line. I also felt like because I had such a bumpy year that my love for it would kind of fade a little bit. But it's only reconfirmed that I still want to be doing this. Nothing has faded away. I 100% want to be out there going as hard as I possibly can every day to get better.
On this episode of The Rundown, I spoke with Darren Weldrick, fresh off his 660-kilometer relay race from Toronto to Montreal, an event he created just a few years ago. Darren's been running for a long time, and as he teaches his athletes, has made it part of his lifestyle. For him, running is a passion, a hobby, and he's also turned it into a career, coaching running all over Toronto. We discuss how running culture has changed over the years, best training practices, and ways we can strengthen our bodies. You won't want to miss our talk. Hope you enjoy. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, 'tis the season of giving, and if you're already eyeing your next 2020 race, today is the day to register. Today at noon Pacific time, the organizers at the Rock and Roll Marathon Series are having a 24-hour sale on all races they offer. At this stage, it's only a small discount, but when you compare it to the pricing if you sign up closer to race day, the savings are significant. So get in early, save some cash, and slowly start training for your next year's goals. After all, the hardest part is always signing up. If you're looking to spread some cheer this holiday season, let's put those running legs to good use. On Sunday, December 22nd, in Montreal at 11 a.m., the Mile End Miles Run Club will be hosting a run starting from Le Local Lululemon store. We'll be running to St. Justin's Hospital with gifts in hand for the many children who need. Everyone is welcome to join. The only thing we ask is that the gifts are new and in their original packaging. You could bring crayons, Legos, memory games, or books. It's up to you. I'll put the Facebook event link in the show notes so you can find all the details. And if you can't participate because you live in another city or another part of the world, consider doing something like this in your area. It'll go a long way, especially this time of year. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. My next guest actually ran to Montreal from Toronto in a relay, in an event he actually co-created. I'd like to welcome to the show Darren Weldrick.
Thank you for bringing me on the show, Justin.
Yeah, thanks for being here. How are you feeling? It's literally just happened. Like this podcast won't air right away, but you literally just got into town not too long ago.
Yeah, I got into town around 11:11 actually was the official time, 50 hours and 11 minutes. And one team just got in a couple hours ago, I think now, the final team.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Was that, because I know it's not the first year you guys have done this event. Can you kind of give us a history of what exactly this race is and kind of how it came about?
So this is the third year we've done it. But the second year we opened up to the public. Year number one, we just wanted to set the route and make sure it was viable and go through the whole thing that way. And last year we opened it up and we had, you know, three or four teams interested. One really signed up and took the charge against my team. That was great. And this year we had five teams in total. So it's been great growth so far and the kind of growth that you can keep up with. But if you're asking how it started, you know, I've been a runner for a long time, and this guy that I used to coach, Colin Buchanan, he entrepreneurial like myself, at his own business, and just a big ideas kind of guy. And he and I were just sitting down for beers one night, and I said, you know, one day I'm going to run to Montreal. I'm from Montreal. We both live in Toronto. I'm going to run to Montreal. So he's like, well, you're nuts, but if anyone can do it, you can. And at the time, I didn't know what that meant, you know, how I was going to do it, if I want to set up as a race, if I just want to do it once, or whatever. Before he and I got to explore the idea, we found out he had multiple brain tumors, and over the next couple of years, his close friends and I sort of traveled with him a lot and did some adventures and stuff while he was healthy enough, and then eventually he died. And that was a big loss. He was someone that was in my life, you know, daily. So I thought, how, like, I got to get out of this funk. I want to get back to training and doing all the things I love. And then I realized, you know, we were talking about this run to Montreal. And of course, that's ended up what we called it, Run to Montreal, R-U-N-T-O-N-T-L. So, but I still didn't know how I wanted to do it. And I knew about this other race from LA to Vegas through Death Valley, called the Speed Project, that I had always wanted to get into, and or always it had just started at that point. And so I managed to get a team in and completed it. And I talked to those guys, and I'm like, this is sort of the format that I want to do. It's, you know, slightly different. They were all aboard. They realized that we weren't trying to copy anything. You know, it's a different race, different time of the year, but they appreciated that I talked to them about it. And so once I got back from that, I just contacted my crew, the people that I coach for my company called the Runway Consulting Services, and a bunch of people that I coach. And I said, anybody wants to do this, let me know, and I'm going to put this together. And that's what we did.
Mm. So it was like inspired by your friend and also by the Speed Project, which is a pretty cool relay race.
And that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And at that point, the Speed Project, they'd only done it. It hadn't even been open to the public yet, which now it's exploded, if anybody knows about that race. But yeah, so it was inspired just by crazy ideas with a good buddy of mine.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the rules? Like what's the kind of blueprint for anybody that wanted to participate? Like how far is it? How many people can participate on any given team?
So it's 660-ish kilometers from Toronto to Montreal. You start off at Nathan Phillips Square in front of the Toronto sign, do a little tour around Nathan Phillips Square, and then you head down to the waterfront and straight on to Montreal. You finish at the chalet at the top of Mount Royal. So it's an ultra relay. So just for anybody who doesn't know what an ultra marathon is, a marathon is 42.2K or 26.2 miles. An ultramarathon is anything longer, typically 50 kilometers, we'll say, but it'd be 47 kilometers or whatever it is. So for an ultra relay, the idea is each participant would run an ultramarathon worth of distance, relay style. So I'm going to run 10K, you're going to run 10K, and then somebody else is going to run 10K, and we've got an RV following us. So it's supported, but you're not carrying really anything when you're running. But we really, we set up 67 legs. We measured it out with a GPS file for our coordinates for each leg. And we went and actually did it just as my own crew the first year, just to see what it would be like and see if the route would work, if we needed to make changes and that kind of thing. And it did. And so what was it like?
Yeah.
RV life, that's what it's like. You spend a lot of time with people in an RV. You don't sleep much. You spend a lot of time thinking about survival. It's like you've got between 50 and 60 hours roughly to complete this. I mean, there's no time limit. It can take longer, but we knew we'd be in that range. And so for those, you know, this year it took us 50 hours and 11 minutes. So for that 50 hours, literally we're thinking about, when can we get sleep? How can we support our runner who's out there? Is there any danger out there? Anything we have to figure out? Who's driving? Do we have a bike that can support the runner? Is it dark? Food? All that kind of stuff. That's what it's like. You know, it gets a little smelly. You get a little tired. Tensions get high, but you really sort of come together. And A, you figure out what you're made of, and you get to see who your friends are, and you form. It brings people together in a unique way.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree. Like with the runaround 125, so it's 125 kilometer race around Montreal, the island of Montreal. We did it the first year Run Right team did it, and I loved it so much. A year in a car with all these six people, and you're going around. You spend the whole day together, and you're kind of like, you're not competing against anybody. But I'm sure you experienced in the first time you did it, like, that's the goal, that's the accomplishment, and you kind of build a stronger bond, and we're all friends, closer friends now because of it. So that's kind of I can completely relate. And you guys did the runaround this year as well, which is cool, and kind of how we connected a little bit more over the summer. So then after that first time, you opened it up to other people. So I know when we were trying to grow the 125, it was like, how many teams do we want to bring in? Like, what's safe for this kind of course, for this kind of event? Because, you know, you want it to be, as much as you want to like open it up to people, you also want to kind of be cautious to not grow it too much at the start. So did you have those kind of similar thoughts early on?
We certainly did, Justin. So, you know, with the 125, like you said, I did it. You know, different time of the year, smaller race, very condensed. So those factors, in essence, maybe come into play more. You have to really think about that a little bit more for an unsanctioned race. With Run to Montreal, because it's so long, even if you had, if we had 10 teams this year, you spread out fairly quickly. If all 10 teams were exactly the same sort of pace and stuff like that, that'd be different. But we just know that it's not likely to happen. So we certainly had to think about that. But after doing it the first year, we knew, A, we could handle growth. We could handle 20 teams, but we want it to grow slowly because we want the event to have the same sort of magic that it started with. You know, do we ever want 40 teams? Do I ever want 40 teams? I don't know. But I definitely know that if I want to participate in it while we have it, you know, between 5 and 10 teams is about where we're at with it. But the other reason we wanted to grow it was, it was a really cool event, very unique. Toronto to Montreal, two iconic Canadian cities. And it's pretty lonely out there. Like you're running by yourself. So the idea of having someone to chase, or people are chasing you, or you know, we have an app that everybody connects to, so you can see where all the teams are and for safety of your runners and stuff, called this 360 app. And, you know, really cool to sort of see where people are and did somebody make a wrong turn? How did they adjust? It's all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We had that a little bit in the second year. The second year, the exciting part was the team that put it, you know, entered the second year. You know, they're experienced runners, but they weren't experienced in ultra relays or any of that kind of stuff like we were. But they really sort of took it seriously and they got into it. And it was kind of fun to see that. So for me, I don't know if I could call myself a race director, but organizer of the race and, you know, the ideas guy behind it, I enjoyed, as much as I enjoyed the type 2 fun of running for hours and hours and hours with no sleep, I also enjoyed watching them sort of unfold. And I realized, like, I really want this to grow. So I had, you know, good things come in threes. This is number three, but I want 5 years of this and we'll see where it goes.
What was different about this year and what made it special for you?
So we got a lot of press the first year because we did, you know, some charity and some different things like that. A lot of press. I mean, a reasonable amount of press and that kind of thing. A few articles in the newspaper, some interviews and stuff like that. Year number two, a little bit less for whatever reason, but that was okay. You're building. This year was really special because I didn't have to, all of a sudden, all the work that I had done sort of happened throughout the year to organize it, get teams together. Now the teams, the four other teams, were advertising for the race, talking about the race, raising their own money for charities, usually tied into some of the same charities that we had, and different things like that. And so that just grew because five teams or four or five teams of people can do way more than I can on my own. And that's really, I've always been that kind of person in any job or any team leader or manager type of position or coach. You know, it's just watching that grow. And that's really exciting for me. And it's motivating for other people. And this year, you know, I was not the fittest I've been, and people laugh at that, but it wasn't my fittest. So it wasn't fair for me to be the main guy on the team. Mm-hmm. Like, I had other roles this year, supporting roles in a way, which is good. And it's it's interesting to sort of be that. Do I want to go back to being the lead runner on my team next year? Absolutely. But it was a little bit different this year, and just watching the whole thing grow and seeing other people come out and flourish and have an opportunity to do those types of things on all teams was amazing.
The winning team, did you have them pinned as the team that would win it, or did you have an idea going in? Like, what's it like strategizing for a race that long?
So for my team, there was no strategizing at all. We literally had one team meeting that most people couldn't make because my team was coming from all different places. Everyone's super experienced and things like that. So we just knew we would be able to put it together on the fly. And we did. But then we decided to sort of step out of, like, if you look at pace per kilometer, we were the fastest team, but we thought about it in a different way. So the winning team, the team from Montreal, they really sat down. They put the work into it. They planned it out. And while we had some, you know, discussions on maybe the rules in a race with very few rules, I applaud them for how they went about it and executed the race. It was pretty exciting to see. Mm-hmm. And so next year will be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can argue that, you know, they were just trying to get home faster.
Absolutely. Right. And it's funny that they had the right idea, because some people said to me, why don't we just do it from Montreal to Toronto? And I'm like, are you joking? It's so much cooler to finish on the top of a mountain in the coolest city, in my opinion, in the world, but certainly in Canada, than to finish. And Toronto's great, but so they had the right idea. Like, they're going home.
Yeah, it's it ends at the top, at the lookout at Mount Royal, correct?
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is, we run it every Monday night, and the view never gets old. It's super dark, but just looking at the city lights and stuff, and it's always like a nice sight to see for sure. But you're kind of biased in that you're from Montreal, right?
That's correct. I grew up in Montreal, and I spent a lot of time here. As you know, we got to know each other through me coming to Montreal and visiting and going to different, every crew that you're a part of.
Yeah. It's a nice community here in Montreal. Can you kind of go through your upbringing and background, and was running always a part of it, even from a young age?
So, you know, I grew up in a single parent family. I had a big family, but just, I never knew my father. So my mom is my superhero. She's the one that sort of, without knowing it, set things up for me. But definitely not an athletic family. You know, as a fat little kid, I wanted to eat chips, play with my G.I. Joes, and that's it. Like, I couldn't, you know, talk to girls, like, do any of that kind of stuff. It just wasn't anything I thought of. And one day I was like, I feel like garbage. I'm 10 years old. I feel like garbage. So I just got into every sport. I was shit at all of them. But running, I was shit, but not as shit. And I just thought, well, you know, I'm an only child. I didn't think this, but I think this now. Like, I loved, it was my alone time. So then it forced me to do things with, be social and do things with other people. And all of a sudden I was like, not a bad runner. Like, so, you know, like, turns out not sitting around eating chips and cakes all day and getting out and exercising is good for you. And that's as simple as it is to, you know, feel better about yourself. So when I learned that at that age, that was great. And then I went through school, high school and university, Cégep University, running. And at that point, I was starting to become somewhat accomplished. You know, certainly not Olympic level or anything like that, but it became something that I was good at, but I also enjoyed. And so that became, you know, I consider myself one of the original run commuters, because that's how I traveled everywhere. And this is like when I was 17, 18, 19, and now 30 years later. So that's how I got into running in Montreal.
Nice.
I think I got off topic there for a second.
No, it's okay. But did you get to go through running in the school program? Because I know, like, you're from, like, you're like one of the originals, I think, of running, you know? Like, you've been in the run community for so long. Like, for sure it's changed over time. Like, did your school allow you to excel at running, or were you running on your own, or what were the programs like back then?
So, you know, I didn't come from a wealthy family, so I didn't really, until I started working for myself, had the money to go into private clubs or any of that kind of stuff. I did eventually go to it, but I was just in the school programs, and we were all supported, but these were, you know, teachers or moms or fathers or volunteers coming out to help coach and stuff like that. And then I realized, like, these guys are doing a good job, but imagine, and they certainly, I mean, they're doing a great job. They inspired me, but certainly, I thought to myself, imagine if, like, this is what they did for a living. And I realized that's what I wanted to do for a living, become a coach and help other people. But to do that, I wanted to become maybe more accomplished as a runner myself first. Mm-hmm. So, and to your question, I think a bunch of us, maybe if you're in this run, this summer we're talking about this, like the run community in Montreal has definitely changed since I've moved away. I come back a lot. It's really fun because there's so many different groups and most groups are social and people, you guys have your workout groups and different things like that. But when I was growing up, and certainly when I went to Toronto, if you're at a club, it was performance first. That was it. You socialized and you had fun, but you were there for performance. That was the reason you went to the club. Mm-hmm. And then the socializing and stuff came afterwards. Whereas now, I mean, there's, I don't know how many run clubs in Toronto and almost as many in Montreal, and it's really grown. And it's really exciting to see from that perspective. But it's also different. Because, you know, I go to clubs now, I'll come to your various runs that I see where we've met. And, you know, it's about running with the group together. And whereas any social runs that I would have when I was growing up or previous to that, it's you run at your own pace with the people at your own pace. And if there's nobody at your pace, you adjust your pace, you know, if you want to run with people. But, you know, running is a social sport, but it's also a solo sport. So I spent a lot of time running on my own. And which is great too. So it was
performance first, social after. Now it's like the runs are all social.
Yeah, a lot of the runs that I go to now are also, they're still performance groups, but it's more, you know, running groups now are more welcoming to people who don't want to go and compete or perform or whatever, which is fantastic in so many ways for people who just want to get in and run and meet people and all that stuff. So that from that side, it's really amazing. The flip side is the performance side. You know, there's a big debate there whether performance side can suffer from that, but I don't think it has to. If you want to perform, you go to a club that performs and you socialize with other groups, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think you probably do a lot of that. You compete yourself and that kind of thing. So you have your groups that you go and you run with your friends and all that stuff. And that's how I am. I like to do that. But when it's time to work out, it's time to work out.
Yeah. The run club isn't for the workout. Yeah. The run club is to go meet new people, talk, hear about someone else's race or whatever it might be, make a new friend. And then when I have to train, I'm doing it on my own or with somebody that I know can do the training. And yeah, I think you do need a balance. It's good to have that balance. But yeah, it sounds like it's definitely changed. When did you start to see yourself change from, like, you know, a recreational runner to more of a performance runner?
I always wanted to be a performance runner. I just wasn't for a long time. I just wasn't that good. But I put in the work and eventually I became much better at it. And, you know, running is one of those things that the more work you put in, you know, the better your foundation and the better you'll be, kind of thing. It just doesn't lie. It's the most honest sport for me, at least. One of the most honest pursuits, if you can look at it that way. And so then, you know, I mean, I coach runners. I strength train runners. I run myself. My friends are runners. You know, for the longest time, I read about runners and all this stuff. So my life became, you know, and I run commute. It was all about running. So at that point, I realized, like, to not burn out and to be able to give my athletes that I do coach what they need and what they're coming to me for, I decided that I want to do, you know, maybe I'd take a year off of racing. But still, I still ran and trained just as much because I love it. But so that's when things start to shift for me, and I realized that being, you know, you have that competitive edge and you want to get out and be the best you can be, but also making running part of your lifestyle is probably going to be the best way to maintain a high level of fitness for a much longer period of time. A lot of my friends, when they went off to various scholarships, track and cross country and different schools and things, and when that was done, and they realized they had to work and they had to, you know, jobs and kids and all that stuff, either they put the running on hold for a little while or they just stopped altogether because they thought, well, I'm never going to be as fast as I was due to life or due to whatever, so why continue? Like, let's get into something else. And a lot of people that I know who had that attitude start to come out of that now, and they're like, you know, I still want to run. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely in my life, in my circle, in my lifestyle, it's definitely evolved. But running is just a part of my daily, like there isn't a day that, you know, there's just not a day that goes by mm-hmm. where I don't have time to run. It's just not a thing.
Yeah. Do you remember, you know, what your first races were, or your first running goals were, like as a, like when you, as going through that progression and like becoming a lot better at running, was there anything that you like became a goal for you?
You know, I mean, I wanted to improve my 5K. Like I was a track runner. That's how I sort of grew up.
Okay.
Which is a good place to start. You know, all the best marathoners in the world usually at one time or another started on the track. And that's, you know, they built strength training, speed, and all the right things to do. So that's, and that's where I came from. So I wanted to get faster and then turn that into, you know, whatever, 5Ks. And then I got into half marathons. And not that there's a progression, like a half marathon is definitely not, you know, more advanced than a 5K unless you're doing it as a beginning idea. 5Ks are very hard and to train for them is difficult. But I just, you know, you changed along the way. And my most recently, my goals have been these ultra relays. How can I train people to do them? And how can I use like that high level of mileage and the amount of running I love to do and still be fast and that kind of thing? And that's been kind of exciting for me because that's like an untapped area and it's fresh and it's exciting and it's all that sort of stuff. But early goals were just to be, you know, as fast as I could. And, you know, I kind of liked looking better than I did when I wasn't running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely helps stay in shape. I don't think I've hit a gym in at least a couple of years, which is which is a blessing. But now after New York, it's like I don't want to run. I don't want to see my running shoes for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm scared of what might happen. I have to change my eating habits a little bit.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, how do you like training these relay runners? Like it sounds like even marathon training to a certain extent. Like how do you, and I'm trying to learn this myself, training for a longer distance, how do you get faster? How do you still bring in, get that speed when you have that high volume?
So one thing is not to lose the things that made you fast in the first place. So strength training in the gym, a huge thing. Drills, mobility drills, things like stairs and short hills and doing hills all the time. They lengthen your stride. You know, you never want to have your hip flexors being tight. As soon as your hip flexors are tight, your stride gets shorter, you can't run as fast, things like that. So making sure you're always doing that kind of stuff, even though you're running a higher mileage. So for you, if you're training for, you know, marathons, you know, you've got your long run and you've got those things, but you still have to keep, even if it's every 2 weeks, only one day where you're doing strides or 200s or short intervals just to keep that going. Because the faster your top end speed is, the greater the difference is, I guess, from your top end speed to an easy run, the better off you'll be. You have more gears, I guess, if you want to talk about that, if you understand what I mean. So
I totally get it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if your fastest speed is a 5 minute kilometer and your slowest speed that you would ever run at is a 5:30 kilometer, you're never really expanding on what you've got. But if your top speed is 3 minute kilometer and you do a lot of easy runs at 5 minute kilometers, it's much better. So you always want to be training those muscles and thinking about it in that way. But building a foundation, you know, long distance running is all about long distance running. Mm-hmm. More volume, not necessarily more and more long runs. That comes when you get more advanced. But for sure, especially for marathons and things like that, you have to have those. But more volume, running a couple times a day maybe, or running every day a little bit. And there's definitely a lot of research to back that up.
Yeah. And I find it interesting, like, I mean, I'm guilty of that, I guess, is that, like, I was running, let's say, half marathons for the longest time, like, you know, 5 years or something, and then got into longer stuff, like, even got into a shorter triathlon, and then always wanted to, you want to get to, you know, the Ironman or the marathon, like, the top distance, you know?
Right.
But the short stuff's so important. And but when you're at the marathon or at that top distance, like you want to get faster too. But I don't think people understand that you need to be faster on the short stuff, and it's like build from there. Like the faster that's why, like you were saying, like track runners or even these like top Olympians, like they were specialists in the 5,000 or the 10,000 or the 1500 or 800 meter, you know? And then later in their career, they've kind of built in this longer distance stuff, and the speed translates.
100%. If you look at Bekele, who won Berlin, mm-hmm. I mean, where did he come from? You know, his role model was Gebre Selassie, and, you know, he went off and sort of took down a lot of his records on the track. But, I mean, these are guys that they were, you know, world-class 1,500-meter runners, 5,000-meter runners, 10,000-meter runners. You know, you add a few long runs into that, and all of a sudden they're world-class marathoners, and they haven't even tried to train for the marathon yet. And his was interesting, too, because a little bit off topic, but he came from that pedigree of the track. But if you watch, you know, he was not in his top shape. You know, he'd only been back training for 3 months, but if you watch how he ran that race, I would imagine the commentators would say that he wasn't even part of the race with the leaders for a long time. But his fastest kilometers were the last seven. Mm-hmm. And he won. And when he went by the leaders to take the lead, there was no question.
It was for good.
Yeah, it was for good. Yeah. Exactly.
I remember reading it. It was like he started slow. He had a horrible like first half or something.
Well, did he have a horrible first half? You know, how many people have you heard say that the last 8K of their marathon is their nemesis? And whenever I have athletes tell me that, I say, I'm willing to bet if I looked at all of your splits of all of your races, it's more like your first 8K. That's your nemesis. You went out too fast. Oh, but it felt easy. It's supposed to feel easy then, right? So, mm-hmm. And the faster your top end speed is, the easier that marathon pace that you're trying to run. If it's, you know, if you're trying to run 250 or whatever that is, you know, then you need to be able to very comfortably run much faster than that to be able to make that 250 pace obviously feel easy, and it should feel easy until it doesn't, and that's when the work happens, and that's when your workouts and all that sort of stuff in. So the higher your top end speed and the better your pacing, the better your race will be.
Yeah, I wish I could finish that race like he did. Like, it's so hard mentally though. Like, even New York going into it, I was like, I had a goal, and like you're saying, I'm like, I felt great until, like, you know, it was good until like 30-32, and then that's when something switched in the body and you get slower because the body's fatiguing. Like, it's how long can you push that? It's hard to come out slower and trust that the last 8K you're going to have that extra speed because you were 5 seconds slower in the beginning. You know what I mean? It's so hard to...
It seems counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Because it's so late in the race. It's such a long race. But I guess it all comes with experience. You got to try it to understand it and just...
Well, then you just make all of your runs, you know, every long run you do, you start slower, finish faster. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you trust it. And then that just becomes second nature. Yeah. I think so. But New York is a special case because, I mean, every marathon is different, but New York, you know, I mean, by all accounts, you had a successful race, but the hills are all right at the very end. So no matter how fresh you are going into that, mm-hmm. it's going to affect you.
Yeah. That mm-hmm. Fifth Avenue stretch was, jeez, yeah. Like it never ended, you know?
Right.
What are some races that you've done over your career, like throughout your running adventure?
Things that I'm most proud of?
Yeah. Or,
you know, we have this, used to be called the Midsummer Night 15K in Toronto. It's called Shakespeare Runs the Night now, and some rebranding and stuff, new owners. And I've done that many times and sort of became part of a little trifecta that I would always plan my racing season around, because it would usually be, there'd be a 5K on the Sunday, and then that race would be on a Saturday the following week, and in between there'd be, so 5K, 15K, and in between on a Thursday would be a 6K race that I would always do. And I would always train to do really well at those, because to make that sort of interesting, you know, I remember one year going into this 15K, and I'd won it several times, and would never get a big field, but there'd always be a few fast guys, and one year these two guys were ready to level up, and I was not interested in running that race hard. I'd run 90 minutes before, it was going to be a long run, all this stuff. And that was pretty exciting because, and this one guy, Eric Bang, like, he's much faster than me now. The one race we did do together, you know, I beat him, and it was exciting because I just had that experience at that point. to go out, and I went out and I tried to drop some guys, and these two guys just wouldn't drop. So I picked up the pace again, and I'm like, I already got one race in me and 90 minutes before this. So I slowed down, we went, and then they made their move thinking I was done. And that was like strategic. So it wasn't by any stretch my fastest 15K, but it was probably the best one that I've done just racing. And I was pretty excited. And I ended up winning it. And I had my last couple of K were the fastest ones that I'd done. That was pretty cool. Speed Project, the second year I did, I went into that really experienced. So that year I did a lot of ultra relay type stuff. This one, Peak de Brou, you go through the Adirondacks, and did that as an ultra relay. And so where I ran 100 kilometers in one day, if just like you're running as hard as you can for various legs and things like that. But this year, the Speed Project that I did, like I was running some of my fastest kilometers towards the end. And it was pretty exciting just to see that the training had kicked in. And, and my first leg was terrible. That's because, 36 hours before my team and I get into LA, and it's vacation time, and we just had way too much to drink, and we were stupid, and I felt it for the first couple of legs, but I also trusted in my training. You're out there for a long time. You're out there for 40 hours or whatever it is with our team. And so I was really proud of how I just kept my cool and just paced properly and just finished that race super fast. Well, for me at least. And, things like that, just all the stuff that some of my favorite races have always been the ones that where I could go back to my athletes and say, here, I'm telling you to do this. I do this. It's going to work for you. So those are a couple of examples that I always sort of keep in mind.
Do you think that helps you as a coach? Just because you're a good coach doesn't necessarily mean you're a good athlete, but it certainly helps. So having done those races and having that experience, do you think that it helps you acquire new runners and also makes them believe that in the believe in the process? Because I think so much of training and racing and all that is that exact thing, like trusting the process. Do you think that helps you like get through to your athletes and like make them understand that's what they need to do or that's what they should be doing?
I think so. I think, I offer several practices a week with my club, and at least once a week I'll go out and work out with them. And so I'll pace them or do different things and stuff like that or do my own workout, and they see how I'm doing it. And, you could say that, well, they're paying you to coach, not run with them, but they then get to see what I'm doing. I still live and breathe what I'm talking about. I don't know how long that'll last. As far as I'm concerned, it should last forever, but we'll see. But it's leading by example and doing those types of things. And so eventually I may slow down. Maybe I already have. But as long as I'm doing the things that I'm telling people to do and it's working, you're getting the best results. I don't know how many times I've told athletes, and it's always funny. It's usually guys that are around like 10 or 12 years younger than me. And they're like, okay, but that works for the elite athletes, or maybe that works for you, but they're impatient and they go out and crash and burn. Maybe they get a personal best and they congratulate me for helping them and all this stuff, but then I try to show them how much faster they could have been had they not done that. Mm-hmm. And so I design runs and workouts that show that every time. Mm-hmm. So we do hill repeats. And then one of the hills that we use, as you get around the corner, the last 40 meters is kind of the steepest. And that's, I say, you push hard coming up this 250-meter hill. The last 40 meters, that's when you push really hard, and you're going right through that line. And I do that all the time, so I'll run with them and stuff, and then I just take off in that little section. And you don't actually always get faster, but you certainly stop yourself from slowing down. And running right through that finish line is important. It's like, don't slow down before you get there. So finishing faster than you start in workouts and long runs and all of that stuff. If your long run pace is, 5 minutes per kilometer, that's your normal long run pace, and that's what you should do. I say start off at 5:15, 5:20 for the first couple of K, and then work your way down. So you finish at 4:15 or 4:45 or 4:30. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take the toll on your body that it would have if you'd gone out too fast, and you're running much faster, and it's good practice. So those are the types of things that I tell my athletes to do for sure. And yeah.
The other than the training and the workouts, what other things do you preach to your athletes?
Strength training for sure. Patience is another thing. You know, distance running is all about patience. You put in work over, it's not days and weeks, but months and years. That's sort of how it goes. You know, so I'll have a good story when I get back to my athletes after this, because I was able to run almost as fast as I normally do, having not run much in the last 2 months. You know, I haven't run much since, well, I did run around in Harry Cannon. I didn't really do a whole lot after that. I did a mental break and different things, and I had a couple of niggles I had never had before, so I wanted to address them. So, but coming into this, the longest run I did in 2 months was my first leg. It's also the fastest I've done any run in a while. And, you know, but if you put years of time in and you build that foundation, you know, the house is not going to crumble just because things are hard. So, and it really makes a difference. So, and I knew this 10 years ago. That's what I taught my athletes 10 years ago. But as I've gotten older, it's sort of, people believe it more, I think. So one of my fastest runners, Paul Heyer, 61, went out, did Ironman. Kona didn't work out too well for him. Couple weeks later, did another one. It was Miami, I can't remember where. Crushed it. Just crushed it. Won his age group for sure, but also was not, he was no slouch in the overall division. It was like a couple weeks later, like, you know, there's a guy that I've coached for a long time. And he uses, I'm not his bike or a swim coach, I'm his run coach, but he uses those principles overall, strength training and the running stuff that I give him, and those themes he uses in everything that he does. So, you know, he's kind of done Speed Project. And other than some of the absolutely top of the line elite athletes that were in some of the teams, he's one of the fastest guys there. And, you know, we for sure, every year I've done Speed Project, we've had the oldest team.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
But it's just putting those practices and watching people do that is awesome.
And did you do it in the competitive entry, or like were you six people or were you more than six?
We did six.
Okay, cool.
Yeah we did six. Yeah. We always did six. We did six. We had 1 year, we had one woman. After we registered, we found out she was pregnant.
Yeah.
So she didn't, we wouldn't let her run in the daytime and all the stuff. So she ran a few kilometers. She ran more than a few kilometers, but she didn't run all of her legs. Just for safety, which, you know, but so the five of us really picked up the slack on that one, and that year we were fourth overall. It was pretty exciting. So that was pretty cool. So, you know, we were welcome back the next year, and the next year we had a much faster team. It was much hotter and there were more teams, so we weren't fourth the next year, but that's okay.
Yeah,
like it was a pretty exciting overall.
It teaches you that, you know, anything can happen on a race day. You got to take what you can on the day, like all these things like my coaches taught me. And I just repeat those things all the time. It's so easy to get wrapped up in weather and but no two races are alike. You know, there's different circumstances. You might be, work might be different for you, relationship, all kinds of different things. Like your athlete that went to Kona, like it's Kona. There's a lot of pressure to perform there too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And where you have to work your mental and mentally prepare and like don't get in your own head. How do you teach your athletes about mental skills, and is that something that you work on with them?
I do as much as they'll let me. And a big thing that I do is I tell people to make it a lifestyle. There's always going to be another run. So sure, you have some goal races, and those are important. But keep sharp, you know, have some key workouts. Think about running as a lifestyle, and then all of a sudden those races are, as important as they are, they don't take away, if you have a bad race, they don't take away from, you know, 16 weeks of amazing training. Or you could have, let's say in a 16-week block or a 12-week block, whatever, 10 weeks of a 12-week block go well. You get sick 1 week and you have a bad race. Okay, but look how much fitter you are. Those are, you know, that journey, that process is way more important most of the time, because those peak moments where you have that day where you get that PB or, you know, these world records and stuff like that, every one of those athletes will tell you that they had more days where they felt like crap than they felt fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's those days that they felt amazing that you know, look back and what did I do? You know, everything clicked that day, but it clicked that day. It's never a fluke, you know? So those are the things you want to keep in mind. And if you love the sport and you love, what it does for you, then just keep doing it. And the more running you do, and the more you have that attitude and that positive attitude about it, the better off you'll be and the more positive results you'll have.
Mm. How long have you been in Toronto now?
So I went for a long weekend in Toronto to visit my mom, whose job had moved her there in 1994. And so that's when I couldn't tell you that I moved there at that point, but I started living there. And then I got a job and, you know, I'd broken up with a girlfriend and all this sort of stuff. And I thought, okay, I'll stay here for, I hated Toronto. I mean, I was from Montreal. And in the mid-90s, Toronto was not that fun. Montreal was fun.
Montreal's still fun.
Montreal's still fun. Toronto's now more fun than it used to be. I was 22 years old. Like, when somebody's telling you to go home at 1 a.m., when usually you just go out at midnight, it was kind of weird. You know, obviously focus has shifted since then, but... yeah, so that's when I went. And I decided I was going to stay there for as long as it took me to feel like I had the kind of life I wanted. And then all of a sudden I realized, like, I'm going to make, like, what I call a Montreal life in Toronto. And that's what I did. And so I always figured I'd move back. But the good thing about Toronto and Montreal is not that far. I mean, you can run between the two cities.
There you go.
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing the coaching, and how long have you had your own business and stuff? Was that right away for you, or have you always been an entrepreneur, or what?
I've always been, I was a personal trainer or coach at school, things like that. But I started my own business. So I bought into a business in Montreal, a successful business, or in Toronto, a successful business a while back. And in the early, probably around 2000, 2001, something like that. And, you know, the existing owner and I eventually just decided we wanted different things with our companies. So I sold my shares back to him and then started my own thing in 2005 or six. And I've been going strong since then. So, and I have a couple of unique things that I would bring to the table. But one being that strength training, you know, I'm one of the only running coaches that's also a strength coach. I mean, I'm sure there are more of them now that I don't know, but certainly in those days, that was not common at all. It still isn't common. But so I really put the two together. So, you know, I'm your running coach, I'm your strength coach. If you need physio, your physio talks to me. I direct, they put together the plan, what they need, make the recommendations, but I direct how that you come back to running and all that sort of stuff. And it's good. It you don't have as big of a club or as big of a, you know, I'm not going to have as many athletes as some other coaches may have, but that's fine. I don't want as many either.
I find the strength training part, like, really interesting. I think after New York, it's something that, well, I've been saying it for a few years now, but it's something that I really want to implement going into next season. That's something I want to change. Not that I'm unhappy or anything with my results this season, but as an athlete, I want to keep improving. And my goal is a personal goal. It's like, I want to be the best runner I can be at this age. I consider myself, like, getting into the game a bit late, but whatever. Some of the best runners now, they're having a lot of success later in life. But I find the strength part very interesting, and I'm actually considering also, like, maybe learning more about strength conditioning, maybe potentially being a coach as well. So what's, can you give some examples of maybe exercises or that people can do? Like, I know we're on a podcast, so you're gonna have to, like, verbalize them a little bit, but, like, what's like just basic maintenance? What should everybody do in order to just maintain good running strength, you know, without getting too elaborate, I guess?
So there's a few things. I mean, most injuries, so if you look at where injuries come from, they come from one of two umbrellas. Either they're biomechanical, or they come from training errors. So a training error would be something like, you know, doing too much too soon, that kind of thing. Not giving yourself rest. Things that you can, usually it's things that you can control. Biomechanics, a little less so. So when you look at why people get injured under those two umbrellas, then you can start to look at things like, okay, am I injured or am I hurt? So if I'm hurt, I can probably still run and rehab through it. If I'm injured, you've got to stop. And so the idea is you never want to get injured. And if you never get injured, those little, the wear and tear and that stuff doesn't build up as much. So the scar tissue and these types of things and the time away from running, all that, or training or whatever sport you're in, doesn't build up as much. So you want to think about stuff like that. So now you understand how that works. Where do these biomechanical types of things come from? Usually they come from butt, hip area. If you drive, sit down all the time. I have trouble sitting a lot. Like I've shifted positions in this, how long we've been together, like 50 times. When your glutes fall asleep, they don't activate. And so then your hamstring takes a load and that just goes down the chain. So you want to do things that activate your glutes. So a proper walking lunge, which I can't, obviously I can't show your listeners right now, but that's important. Things like sidewalks, which is like having a band around your ankles and then walking to the side, landing on your heel, activating your glute med. Those types of things are super important. So hip and glute strength for sure. And then you can do that while doing stairs and hills. So you do stairs, two stairs at a time. It forces your form to be better. You've got to drive your arm up to help get you up there. And we as distance runners, ideally, we would look like a sprinter. So a sprinter is just a more exaggerated form. And some of the best sprinters in the world, if you watch them, they have long stride, fast stride, long stride, hips open up, high back kick. And then when they're running, especially like guys like Bolt or Michael Johnston when he was doing it, and Gabriel Selassie, who was a 1500 meter runner, went on to be one of the best marathoners for a long time. A lot of them are not big guys. Some of the sprinters are bigger, but they're not as big as they used to be. Their shoulders are back, chest is out, and they're running with great posture. So they expand their breath more. And there's different things like that that are important. And those are exercises and things that, if it doesn't come naturally, those are things that I teach to my athletes. So it shows them, I have this one exercise where you sort of hang with in a big pull-up position, your arms are spread out wide, and you sort of kick your legs as if you're doing a lunge back and forth. It's hard to explain. And whatever, if you have a weak glute, that leg, when it goes back, it's not going to go back very far, for example. And so whatever you're doing up there or what you're doing in your lunge is going to show a lot in your running. Mm-hmm. So if you have a poor lunge, your running could be better if you improve your lunge, for example. Strengthen your core, things like that are also important.
And how many days a week would you say is like minimum for a runner? Strength training, I should say.
So I would say you warm up before every run with certain things. And more so if you have issues with IT bands or glute firing or different things like that, you have certain exercises that you'll do to warm up before you go for a run. And you can do that every day before a run. That could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes max. And then you have one or two harder strength days, sometimes three, depending on how advanced you are and how much training you're able to do. Mm-hmm. But certainly twice would be good. Three times is better. And then as you get closer to your peak season, your mileage goes up. You don't have to spend as long doing it, but you still want to do it frequently. And then when you get into, getting closer to your goal race season, if you're doing strength training 3 or 4 times a week, as an example, you might do it 2 to 3 times a week after that, and then 1 to 2. And then it becomes maintenance, that kind of thing. So
I think that's great. I mean, I started doing it maybe a bit too late in the season, like maybe a month out of New York. But yeah, I was like worried about, hips, and certainly that's the glutes came up. So that's, I think that's really important for every runner. And actually when you start to exercise them, you start to feel them a lot more in your runs too, which was a really interesting feeling, because it's a sensation you don't normally, it's something I hadn't felt because I wasn't working them out. Right. And so not being at the gym and stuff like that, I'm guilty of it, but it's never too late to incorporate. And fortunately, I haven't been seriously injured, so.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah.
Prehab is more important than rehab.
Yeah, exactly. I always wonder also about, and now I'm going to use myself as an example, but like for potential, I started running marathons maybe 4 years ago. I love the distance, And I wonder, how fast can I get? If I worked as hard as I could and did all the things properly, like where is my potential? How do you see that in somebody else? and make them realize their potential, or maybe have to tell them, hey, like, this is as far as you're going to get, or maybe suggest somebody else to for them to coach them, or is that part of your process?
It's definitely part of the process. So the first thing I do when I meet someone is I, you know, sit down and we have a chat. That's usually the second thing. The first thing that I usually do, if I haven't met them yet, or if it's been a referral, is I say, okay, I need an email with detailing last year of your training, as detailed as you want to be, certainly the last 8 or 12 weeks, PBs that you've had, maybe in your previous life, current PBs, things like that. I mean, a PB is a PB, but an injury history. And then I ask a very simple question. How many days a week will you realistically get out? Not how many days a week do you have time for. How many days will you go out and run and train? Do you have kids? What's your job like? All that sort of stuff. And then from there, we can put together a package of training and stuff that we'll be able to work on together. And so when I look at it that way, then age is important and stuff, but if you start running later, like you're saying you have, it means you also don't have the wear and tear in your body that you had before. So, if you have a job that doesn't require a lot of overtime or a lot of driving, and you don't have kids, and even if you're mid to late 30s, it doesn't matter. You've got time to put into it then, right? So it's how much time will you realistically do it? But I like to start people off a little bit slower. Most people always want to do more than they should. And I say, let's do a little bit less. And the days that you're going to do more are the days that I'm going to be with you. All the other days, just do less. And so when I put together training plans for people, sometimes it's less than what they were doing. And all of a sudden they get more results. But I'll add on an extra day of training or whatever it is. But looking at someone's potential, it's always interesting because I could look physically at someone and say, they could get here physically, but then there's the mental game and how busy they are and how much they want to put into it and all that sort of stuff. And I used to get really frustrated, say 10 or 15 years ago, I'd be coaching people who I knew had potential. Like they would, I can think of a couple of examples. I won't say them here, but just times where it was really frustrating. But then you also have to look at what people want from it. So, often the best runners, but particularly in distance, are the ones that put a lot of time, as I've said a few times tonight, over, months and years. And so then mentally they get stronger and that kind of thing. It's kind of like, if you have a stress fracture in your shin, so you take your 6 to 8 weeks, stress fracture's gone, bones healed. But that bone that was fractured is not as strong as the rest of the bone around it. That's the big difference. So it can, the probability of re-injury is high if you're not thinking about it in those terms. So always go into it at a realistic level. And then, if you have a coach who knows you and you trust, let them direct where you go. Mm-hmm. And that's the right balance between pushing and holding back. But often, a lot of the coaches that I know when to push, and they push at the right times and they know when that is, but hold you back more often. Mm-hmm. to get better. So
was there a challenge that you faced in running, an injury that you faced that you had that maybe you had to work through, and how did you get through that?
So I've only ever had one actual injury where I've had to, where I should have taken time off. And that was, I tore my glute in two spots. I didn't know that it was tearing because the pain manifested itself in my lower back. We thought it was a bunch of different things. So I went out and ran like a couple hundred miles on this. But the good thing is now I know how to treat it and how to prevent it for other people. And eventually it was one day I just popped. I just felt it. I heard it. I was walking like the walking dead. I just couldn't, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. But I was in the middle of a program where I was coaching athletes where I was pacing them and teaching them how to pace. And it was crucial because I had a big group at the time and I wanted them to know how to do it, but I had to finish leading them. So what I did was I would run with this torn glute, take 2 days off, get training, run with them. And I coached 3 to 4 days a week, so I'd run 2 to 3 days with my athletes and get treatment, tons of treatment every day, do all the strength training, all the stuff that I could do. And, came back. But that was pretty scary because, he had that phantom pain in my glute for a good year and a half after that. But I came back really quickly and I learned that with doing the right things, I'm not Wolverine or some super powerful mm-hmm. being. I knew what to do mm-hmm. and I'd put a lot of training in, so I recovered pretty quickly from it. But that was pretty scary to have that. And I did, I did a training camp with a bunch of athletes here. It's when I first met you in Montreal. I went back and I was doing a workout, pretty hard workout on the track a few days later. I had done tons and tons of elevation with no sleep because we're going out at night and doing different things. A few days later, I get back to Toronto and do a workout and I had a small tear in my glute. I just felt it go, but it didn't prevent me from running that time. That time it was small. I knew what had happened. So I was able to run easy. I just backed off anything faster and just did all the strength training stuff. And so when I did the run around 125, mm-hmm. the toughest part for me that day was sitting on it, getting out of the car, not having time to warm up. So I definitely wasn't running at my full potential that day. But, I spent all the weeks just rehabbing to get through that. And then I didn't have to do any speed work or anything like that for a while. So it was just knowing what to do. I have the luxury of knowing a strength coach and a running coach myself, so I knew what to do, and I have a good team of people. But
it kind of goes in that line of like listening to your body, right?
Listening to your body, but also knowing. I think listening to your body, but knowing who to ask for help. Having a team of people that you can trust to help you as well. I guess we all like to think that we know our body, and maybe we do. But are we going to make the right decisions for ourselves? And that's why I have a coach.
Yeah, exactly. What's like looking back, to your 20s, what advice would you give a 20-year-old version of Darren?
So a 20-year-old version of Darren would be, I would say, just focus on the training that you're doing. Forget all the girlfriends and all that stuff that you went through. Just focus on those. Just get out and run, mm-hmm. All the other stuff will sort itself out. Just go out and run and focus on that stuff because, that's the time you really, I had the time, I had the desire, the physical talent to go much further than I did. And that's the advice I'd be like, don't waste energy on stuff that's not going to help you. Control the things you can, but just, and if I ran with the same outlook on running then as I do now, like 25 years later. So sure, my PVs have maintained or running times have maintained and workouts and stuff up until a couple of years ago, all that time, how much faster could I have been if I had had that? And that's what I tell people. One of the biggest things I have with certain people is, don't stress out about everything. And if you are stressed, go for that run anyway. You'll feel better, even if you don't feel like doing it. But that's the advice I'd give myself 25 years ago.
what's your greatest accomplishment in the sport? You've done a lot there.
Yeah, it's tough to say, I think that, my greatest accomplishment isn't always the fastest times that I've run or that kind of stuff. It's more, I'd like to say that this run to Montreal is one of my bigger accomplishments. Certainly the first 2 years, I performed really well while putting together the race. This year, I still ran, obviously, I don't know how many legs, 14 legs or something ridiculous like this, but it was also, it's bringing communities together and really inspiring a bunch of people to do it. And, I'm going to go and celebrate with these guys in a couple of hours, all the teams. And one of the teams that I'm really excited about is the one that finished at last. Because they were out there and they just kept going and they could have given up and they would have still accomplished a lot more than most people in the day-to-day in terms of, physical pursuits, but they finished it and I'm really proud and excited about, having provided an opportunity for team building like that. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely one of them.
Like we talked about like group running and I think when we talk about group running, it's the communities that we're in and in both Toronto and in Montreal. And that's the part I love the most. It's interesting because I think that's the part for me that connects all my training together, right? we say that those are social runs and stuff, but I do all my training on my own. But it's like when I go out with friends to run, like that's what pieces my weeks together. You know, those are like the runs I really look forward to and like can put you in a really positive mental state and make training positive when we join friends and stuff like that. I know a lot of people are hesitant at first maybe to join groups, and like you're saying, maybe back when you grew up, it was a little bit more intimidating because it was very performance-based, but meeting people and like hearing about people's accomplishments, like it's like a drug, right? It's like,
oh yeah,
it's fun to watch, you know, and it's how we kind of came together as well, you know. Yeah. I don't know what your feelings are about all that, like about maybe both communities or what it's given you.
Well, I think you know, being a coach and leading groups in Toronto, I definitely had an aha moment a couple of years ago with Run to Montreal, because I really, you know, so many groups in Toronto, and other than being, you know, if you're friends with a couple of different groups or people from different groups, maybe you ran with them, but generally speaking, you stuck to your own thing. And as being one of the, you know, maybe having it one of the more original or older clubs for a long time, you know, watching other clubs sort of come up, you know, sometimes that's tough, but you have to change your outlook on that, because, you know, you want to be able to run with other people, and loved watching different clubs. I don't go to all the events, but other clubs put on in Toronto these really cool events, and they do fun stuff, and you know, it brings the running community together. So that's really positive. So coming to Montreal, I remember one of my friends brought me out to a couple of different groups, and she's like, why are you so quiet? I'm not a quiet guy. You know, I talk to everyone. I'm like, I'm just taking it all in. Like, I'm not leading any of these groups. I'm not like top dog here or anything. I'm just here. Nobody knows me from anything. And I liked that. And now, you know, I know a lot more people than for a long time I knew everyone of them, well, not everyone, but a lot of people in the running community in Montreal. Eventually that, you know, that shifts and stuff like that. But so when I was getting to know you and a bunch of people last year, I would just come out and be quiet and just listen and participate and learn. And that's been really exciting for me too, because, well, it's not, you know, that's how I grew up. You got, you know, you can't always be a leader and stuff. Sometimes you need to listen to learn, right? And that's kind of cool. And I was able to do that in my hometown of Montreal because I love coming here. And then I found out, you know, I'm lucky I get to work from home a lot. So I would structure my trips so that I could be like, oh, I'm going to go to your group. I'm going to go to this group on this day. And then, well, I might as well stay a week so I can go to them all. You know what I mean? And yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, literally one every night of the week.
Exactly. Or almost every almost every day. And it's super exciting. And then you go to races and you see people. And yeah, it's less about how well you did. It's for, you know, the training and all that stuff and the experience. But a lot of it's the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of fun for sure. What are some of the things that you're learning now, even like, even though you've been coaching for so long and been running for so long?
You know, there are always new runners, new things coming up, new people, younger people, and it's exciting to be a part of that. And, you know, I never really had to think about that too much until very recently. The last couple of years, you start to, in my life, you know, I'm 47, I'll be 48 soon, and up until recently, I never really thought about that much. And even now, it's like, it's tough for me to think about that because I don't think of myself as whatever a 47 or 48-year-old typically is, mm-hmm. You know, whatever that even means.
But exactly. I just turned 35, so I'm like,
yeah. You know, and I remember very clearly what I was doing when I was 35 and stuff. And it's, but I love just meeting people and seeing what makes people tick and you know, just always learning and growing, and it's about moving forward. Like, I think one of the reasons that I don't feel like whatever age that I'm at is because I just have friends who are older, younger, and all these groups. It's always super exciting to see that. And eventually, you know, you spend long enough in a group or with a group of people, and they get to know that, oh, you're a coach. These people start asking questions and stuff like that. And, you know, it comes back full circle, but it's fun to start off not being in that role.
Mm, definitely.
You know, when you're always in that role to begin with. So
nice. What would you say running means to you?
you know, running is my, like, I have a lot of energy. I'm like, and I need to release it to stay healthy mentally and physically. So it's funny because, you know, from a mental perspective, I need to release all this energy to relax. But when I run and exercise, I build up energy and it's positive and I feel great. And then I want to go for a run and release it. It's like, so it's a good balance of that. So running for that, for me, means, you know, it's that time to myself. It's a time to think about things. One of my best friends is a roommate of mine, and he's my landlord now. And, you know, his first album, a lot of it he wrote lyrics to on our runs. Really exciting. It, you know, it also brings people together. Like, I just think about the people I just ran with for 50 hours and 11 minutes. Like, some of the things you go through on a journey like that, you know, you can't get anywhere else. So running for me is, it's mental fitness, it's physical fitness, but it's just overall health, and it's a lifestyle. It's like, you know, I'm not running back to Toronto, but that would be really cool. Maybe in a couple of weeks.
Maybe in a future edition, it'll be.
Yeah, you know.
Couple of days off and then head back.
It also puts things in perspective. You know, you get out and go for a run, you get somewhere. Like in Toronto, I don't drive. So, you know, anything that's within 10K that I have to go to for work or whatever, often it's easier for me to run. And I feel better. And so if I run commute there and then run commute home, I get there excited and fresh. And then whatever happens in your day-to-day work, you leave it behind at the end of the day. And, you know, I'll tell you, my girlfriend appreciates it when I'm running more.
Right, yeah. You kind of let that out. And.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not all stressed and stuff. What? Where can people find out more about you, about the clubs you run with, and who are those clubs in Toronto?
So, hashtag running the runway. There's a lot of stuff there. Darren Waldrick on Instagram or Facebook. Website is RUNTOMTL. So Run to Montreal, RUNTOMTL. I think I said it right. Mm-hmm. And then I have a Instagram for that as well. So at Run to Montreal or RUNTOMTL. And it all sort of links in. So if you want to find out more about the races and different things, a couple of the charities that we've done, you can certainly do it. The links for a Canada Help site are there. So if you're like, you know what, I really like this charity that you ran for your friend Colin or whatever, you want to donate money, doesn't come through me at all, you just go to the site, make a donation. I usually hear about it, which is great.
So your friend has a foundation?
No.
Or you started a foundation?
No. So my friend, when he passed away in a place called Kensington Healthcare, Kensington Hospice, for palliative, in the palliative care unit. And it just so happened, so he was an athlete of mine, it just so happened that the president and now CEO, John Yip, was also at that time an athlete of mine. So pretty well tied to running. And for me, so we raised money the first year heavily for that. Second year too, but I never wanted Run to Montreal to just be a fundraiser. Not just. I didn't want it to be about fundraising. That's not everyone wants to do that. But the cool thing about having the five teams now is that any charity that people want to associate with, it's just got a bigger profile. So
yeah,
it's always just going to be more and more successful. And then I can focus on the event, which will then expand, and people, if they want to donate or raise money for charity, that's really cool that way. So no, we don't have a foundation, but I'd like to think that we help facilitate the charities that we support.
Nice. What's next for you? Anything big on the horizon or any races or adventures?
You know, I've got a couple of things that I'd like to do in sort of March, which will keep me focused. At the end of November, I'll regroup and I just get back to training. I took a little bit of time off training. I had some other things I want to focus on. And it's the first time I'd really taken a break for longer than a couple of days in my 36 year running career, I guess. So 36 now. Your running career. So really trying to figure out what couple of ultra relays we want to get into and just think about that kind of stuff. And now we'll think about it, make sure we get in, and then put the training together. Mm-hmm. I like that structure. So I don't have a specific race that I've signed up for yet, but that won't last long.
I heard about Hood to Coast this year, and I was like, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, Hood to Coast is cool. Beautiful, and I know a couple of friends who were one of the guys on my team. He went down to support his wife who was doing it.
Nice.
I've got some other ideas in mind.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thanks, Darren, for coming in today. I really appreciate it. Like, I can imagine you're pretty exhausted after running. I mean, I get tired just driving from Montreal to Toronto and back. I can imagine how it felt, but surely you've probably been energized by the team and the teams around you and the people around you, because that's really what it's all about. And so, yeah, thanks for sitting down with me today and coming in for this interview.
Well, thanks very much for having me. And, you know, this kind of thing really inspires me to keep doing it. More people hear about it, and I meet cool people like you.
Cool. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday night at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit our website, iamarunner.ca, and check out their Instagram, @WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram, @TheRundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.